Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And before we get to the Thursday morning show here on WGTD, we want to remind you once again about Wisconsin Public Radio's winter membership drive that is currently underway. We want to remind you that when you support Wisconsin Public Radio, you are supporting WGTD. So we hope that you will take a moment, if you have not yet done so during this pledge drive, to pledge your financial support to Wisconsin Public Radio. You can go to their website, WPR.org, or you can call 1-800-202-2552. And thank you. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD HD. I'm Gregory Berg, and today marks the monthly visit of Nan Calvert from the Seno Conservancy Nature Center, and Nan always rounds up special guests to join her, and on this particular occasion, she has rounded up two people who are very busy helping to prepare for an exciting event that many people in southeastern Wisconsin look forward to each and every year, namely EcoFest. So we'll have Nan introduce these two guests in just a moment, but we're glad that we can have this conversation today. Nan Calvert, first of all, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Well, thanks. I'm so happy to be here.
And tell our listeners about the two women who you have invited to join you today.
Well, Sister Janet Weicker from the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center and I have been partners in conservation for a very long time. And anybody who knows her knows that she's involved in many, many things. And one of them, of course, is EcoFest. And this lovely woman sitting next to me, as everyone can see on the radio, is Jill Buckman. And she and I just met. And she is accounting faculty here at the Technical College. And that's really all I know about her, other than she's involved in planning and getting this enormous endeavor off the ground and making it successful.
Great. Well, we are glad to have everybody here in the studios this morning to talk about EcoFest. Sister Janet, I suspect you've been part of EcoFest right from the beginning. Is that right?
Right. Actually, this is our second annual EcoFest, and it's a partnership between Greening Greater Racine and Gateway Technical College. And it's a really a community celebration designed to share information and engage people in activities that will help us live more environmentally friendly lives. So last year we had between 800 and 1,000 people attend on a rather wintry day. So we're hoping we'll have a great attendance again. The event will take place at the Racine Gateway campus off of Main Street or Lake Street. And it's on Saturday, March 18th from 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock. And we will have lots of features that include demonstrations, presentations, table displays, children's activities that Jill will tell you about, and we also have some great refreshments from the R&R Cafe, healthy muffins and fruit. Mm. So it'll be a wonderful family event.
Tell us a little bit more about this organization called Green Greater Racine.
Right. Greening Greater Racine is a grassroots organization that is comprised of individuals and groups from nature centers such as Seno Nature Center and the Eco Justice Center and Riverbend. So nature centers, businesses, schools, churches, many organizations that are really caring about, can Racine become known as a green community? So the group meets several times during the year. Like last November, we had a celebration to look at all that has been accomplished in the area in the past year. And actually, the Greater Racine area has been doing many green activities, but Nobody knew about them. Schools groups were having their little curriculum things, making children more aware of the environment and how important being out in nature is. Businesses were doing things that were more sustainable energy-wise. And it's not only saving the environment, but it's also good dollar-wise to do that. Churches were doing things. And through the leadership of David Rhodes, he kind of brought all these groups together. And we got to realize, wow, we are really doing a lot of things for the environment. And let's just celebrate that and become more aware and improve our greening efforts.
Right.
Because the earth needs our help.
So in other words, I suppose it isn't literally true that nobody knew about any of this, but almost nobody knew about all of it. I mean,
exactly.
You would know about what your own church was doing, or the church down the street, or your kids' own school, or so on. But so often we live our lives sort of in these isolated silos, in a sense, where we aren't necessarily aware of all kinds of other comparable efforts. And if we're not even aware of those, then in many cases we're maybe doing things redundantly or at odds with each other without meaning to. There are all kinds of reasons why it's good to just know what's happening.
Exactly. And it's a great network. And so they've developed some subcommittees or councils, as they call them, caring about food issues, water issues, energy issues. And one of the presentations or displays at EcoFest is going to be about solar Racine, where a group is getting businesses and homeowners trying to put up solar panels. They did 132 site assessments for the possibility of putting up solar panels last year, and 18 homes in Racine now have them. And this group is expanding itself to Burlington and I think Waterford as well.
Wow. So it's funny what can be spurred into existence when we just know about what's going on. Jill Buckman, I want to make sure we bring you in right off the bat, because it's intriguing that you are part of this as an accounting instructor here at Gateway Technical College, but your involvement in the EcoFest really has very little, if anything, to do with accounting. I mean, with that area of your expertise, explain to our listeners the other facet of your own academic background.
Sure, correct. As I got started in this, I was obtaining my master's in sustainability from the University of Wisconsin Parkside, which I'll have complete by this spring. So my dean, Ray Kukari, decided this would be a perfect event for me to get my hands into and help Gateway bring along their commitment to sustainability and marry our commitment to this great organization, Greening Greater Racine, and commit to our educating the public, as we like to do.
So explain why you are pursuing this degree at Parkside, and does it spring at all out of this other part of yourself? That is, you're obviously somebody well-steeped in matters of accounting and are a teacher here at Gateway. Is this just another separate interest of yours, which you've become increasingly interested in over the years?
It really did start as more of a personal interest, but really accountants are relying a lot more on the sustainable factors of business and trying to bring together people, planet, and profit. So it really is kind of a natural combining of talents, if you will, or interests, because it's important for the companies these days to prove to their investors and to the communities at large that they're doing the best that they can and for the people and planet around them, not just, you know, obtaining profit for the end result.
Interesting. So what kinds of things have you been studying then in this program at Parkside?
We have everything from business classes to looking at the bottom line and how we can make better choices and choosing where we get our products, what costs we get our products from, how we can use reusable products, how we can use solar energy in businesses, to as well as looking at the environment and the waterways. So it has both of a science and business type background.
Yeah, very good. So explain from your perspective Gateway's relationship to EcoFest. How did that partnership come about?
Well, Gateway has a strong commitment to sustainability throughout all of our campuses and centers in both in all of Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth counties. So we wanted to extend this mission to the community at large through a program. On our two other campuses, Kenosha and Elkhorn, we do an Earth Day every year. And on Racine, we wanted to do something different, and we looked at getting an organization or partnership with an organization in the community, and Greening Greater Racine came about, and we felt it was the perfect mix to continue our mission in educating the community.
Very good. And Sister Janet, I would suspect that you would agree that this is a partnership that has been very, very fruitful.
It's been very helpful. Greening Greater Racine couldn't have done it by itself, and Gateway has the facility and a lot of the financial and other expertise to help us pull this great event off.
For those of you just joining us, this is Nan Calvert's monthly visit to the morning show, and Nan has invited with her today Sister Janet Weichert from the Eco Justice Center in Racine, although you're not its director anymore.
I'm the volunteer coordinator now. So.
Oh, okay, very good.
Still very involved.
Great. And Jill Buckman, whom we were just hearing from, is an accounting instructor here at Gateway Technical College, and she has been one of the people who's helped in terms of putting together the specifics of EcoFest, which will be coming up on Saturday, March 18th. And so, Sister Janet, you've already said it runs from 9 until 1, and a host of different things are planned. Just kind of sketch a few specifics for us in terms of the kind of things that people will get to encounter at EcoFest.
First, I'd like to say it's free admission and open to the public. And there's also going to be gifts of seed that people can pick up while they're there.
Huh.
And another feature is going to be electronic recycling. There will be a big truck there. And if you could look, if people are interested in that, they look online at costs. On their website, they can find all the electronic equipment that can be recycled there. So some of the demonstrations that are going to happen is the culinary arts class from a Gateway is going to do a demonstration on gluten-free foods and healthy foods. I think smoothies are included in that demonstration. Our Racine City Forester is going to be talking about trees and how to take care of them. We'll have another expert on watershed care of our Racine and Root River watershed. So there will be six presentations throughout the morning and early afternoon, and then we'll have the display booths. And a new feature is going to be a room called Ask the Experts. And seven people will be there talking about various topics, or you can just go there and ask questions. And some of the topics are on gardening. Any question you have about gardening, Kate Field from the Horticulturist is going to be at that table. We have another one called Greening Your Home, Beekeeping, caring and creating spaces for monarch butterfly. And another one is what's new at Myers Park, how that's being developed. And one that we never had before is going to be about canning. What are some basics of how to can applesauce and jam and things like that?
Huh.
And then in the displays, we have school groups. There are about six schools that are going to participate. They'll have students there showing the projects they've been working on and some of their experiments. As I mentioned, Solar Racine will be present. The Racine Zoo will be talking about their camp programs. We have all of the nature centers nearby being represented, including Sino Center, Hawthorne Hollow, River Bend, and, of course, the Eco Justice Center. Caledonia Conservancy, telling about all the opportunities families and children will have to educate themselves about the environment.
Terrific. And I suspect that for someone who cares about some of these issues, just showing up and seeing all of these people who are actively working on various issues and related issues, it's just heartening to see all that's going on.
Right. And we had visitors last year from Milwaukee and said, oh, how did you pull this off and how did you get so many people excited? And I think the community itself, some people came from Milwaukee and Kenosha Racine, and they were amazed at how much activity was going on. As I mentioned, the networking part. we really need to celebrate what good is happening in our schools, in our government, in our businesses, and in the specifically environmental organizations.
Absolutely. Jill Buckman, as we've said before, you are involved in putting together the children's activities for EcoFest. Can you tell us what kinds of things are planned?
Sure. We try and keep the kids entertained while their parents are looking around or have their parents come through. And we'll have 9 tables in our children's center to focus on respect, reduce, recycle, reuse, rethink, replant, responsibility, restore, and renew. So everything is geared around those 9 terms. And so some of the activities that we have, we have a renew activity that focuses on renewable sources that are being used. Specifically in this activity on Gateway's Racine campus, the children can learn about the solar panels, why we have them, our wind turbines, our native plantings, and then they can also see an energy usage monitor to see how much energy our campus is using at any given time and how much comes from solar and wind.
Hmm.
We also are doing Respect Their Environment and kind of marrying it to some of the activities that are being put on for adults about butterflies, their life cycle, why they're important, and what they can do to help the butterflies, as well as the honeybees. We have an activity geared specifically towards that this year because it ties in well with the adult programming that we've put on. We're also going to have them look at responsibility to themselves and being out in the environment. We have a neat solar beads activity that's new this year that we're hoping that they like. And we have some story times for younger kids, some coloring activities. So a lot of it is hands-on and things that they can come in and do and have fun.
Very good. So, Nan Calvert, are you going to be there?
I will be there. Yes, I will, representing CNO and all the kinds of things that we do, especially preserving land and education and all kinds of things.
Very good. Were you there for last year's fest as well?
Yes, I think I was.
Can't imagine something like this going on without you in the mix somehow. Sister Janet, you were saying that a couple of days before EcoFest, there is another event going on that is worth our talking about.
Right. It's kind of like a prelude to EcoFest, and it's going to be hosted at the Golden Rondell through the SC Johnson group, and it's called Honeybees and the Environment. And we have 2 wonderful presenters. Peter Poley is the president of the Racine Kenosha Beekeepers Association, and his presentation is going to focus on the effects of our human choices on the bee population, and we know how important bees are to our human existence. 1 out of every 3 bites of food that we eat are dependent on bees for pollination, and right now bees are in jeopardy because of loss of habitat and the use of chemicals. And Patty Nagai, who is who was working at the Extension at Burlington, she's retired from that position now, but she knows tons about what to do to help pollinators. So she's going to be talking about what homeowners can do and what cities can do to create green spaces and plant plants that will be helpful to pollinators, bees as well as butterflies and other insects.
Hmm. Nan, maybe you can give us some specifics on just what the situation is at the moment, the kind of jeopardy that so many of our pollinators are in, and what exactly is going on that's causing that?
Well, there are several things that are going on. One is habitat degradation and habitat destruction. So our native pollinators require native plants in order to survive. And so when you have a lack of native plants in the environment, they have to work really hard and go far and wide to find something upon which they can nectar, or their caterpillars can eat, and then actually pollination is sort of accidental. You know, they crawl into the flowers and they pick up the pollen and then they go to another plant, and then pollinate other things. So that's part of it. The other part of it is herbicide and pesticide use that affects not only our native pollinators, but also the honeybee, which is a non-native pollinator, but still in all extremely important in our food supply, in our food chain. So because we've replaced everything with plants that don't provide habitat, that make it more difficult for all of them to survive, we need to rethink what we're doing. Interestingly enough, even if you just plant one oak tree, one native oak species, you can support 500 different species of native butterfly and moth species because their caterpillars require the leaves. It doesn't hurt the oak trees, so they have sort of, if you will, a symbiotic relationship. So there are so many things we can do. If you don't feel that you have enough room to put in a native garden that supports our pollinators, hopefully you have enough room to plant a tree, or you can work with your local governments to put in native oak species or native gardens. There's so many things that we can all do.
So that event is at...
It's going to be Thursday, March 16th. Doors open at 6 o'clock. The program begins at 6:30 and goes until 8 o'clock. So after Peter and Patty give their presentations, the audience will have a chance to do some questions and hear answers, responses. And again, at that meeting, we'll be handing out flyers about the EcoFest.
Very good. Very good. And then EcoFest, of course, is then that following Saturday, the 18th of March. We would probably be remiss if we, in having this conversation, if we didn't at least pause to talk about kind of the way in which at least some people who are environmentally sensitive and concerned might be feeling especially concerned in the moment. That is because of certain ways in which the political tide of our country seems to be, at least in some respects, sweeping in another direction in terms of how policy and so on will likely be drawn up with these kind of issues in mind. I'm just curious what thoughts you have, what concerns you have, and any ways in which those concerns are kind of reshaping the way you're kind of thinking about a lot of this.
You know, it reminds me of what I heard in the recent months about we need to preserve our democracy by becoming active citizens. About any cause that you care about environmentally especially, make your voice heard, whether it's a phone call to your senator, representative, you know, writing letters are important. You know, just what we've been hearing about Standing Rock, or there's, I'm not sure if I have the name correct, but I think it's the 40 acres or something. They're trying to open up another open pit mine along the Menominee River between Michigan and Wisconsin. And it's just destroying pristine areas. And so they're still in the permitting process of that. So I guess my recommendation would be is just keep aware, search out what are some environmental issues that are happening in our state. Keep yourself informed. Talk about it with your friends and then contact your senators and representatives and let your opinion be heard. Sometimes permits are given or decrees are made and the leadership will say, oh, I didn't hear any opposition to this. It's up to us to speak our truth and our care for the environment. If we don't do that, the profit machine will go on. Hmm. You know, they sell it because, oh, it's going to create more jobs. You know, it's going to give us more cheaper fuel. It's going to give us more resources. But, you know, back to, reminds me of when Greening Greater Racine started, we tried to adopt some natural principles. And one of those principles was try to reduce our dependence on taking things out of the earth. Look how much we take out of the earth. We use it for a short time, and then we throw it back into the earth in an unusable manner. Our landfills are getting filled, and many of those leach into the water. So try to reduce what we are using. Only take from the earth what we need so that generations following us will have the resources that they need. Right now, it seems like, you know, big industry is trying to extract every ounce of fossil fuel out of the environment that they can for profit. So, average citizens, we need to be aware, keep studying, and let our voice be heard that this is not good for future generations.
I think, too, find your truth, find your passion. Is it water? Is it clean air? And if you focus on one thing, it kind of helps to lessen the stress and the sadness, because there are so many heartbreaking things in the works right now. For example, allowing mining companies to dump into local streams and local waterways under the auspices of making it easier for business so that we can create jobs. Ask questions, question the statements, and ask yourself at what cost. You know, think about the people in Flint, Michigan, who are still having to purchase water to drink and cook in because their water supply is contaminated. That could happen to any of us at this point. So find your cause, find your passion, stay informed, and then also do things in your own little neck of the woods that make a difference. Because when your friends and your neighbors see you doing something, whether it's a rain barrel or a rain garden or you're planting a native garden, hopefully they'll be curious and they'll ask you, why are you doing that and what is the benefit of that? But yes, we all have to engage now. We have to enliven our democracy.
And that's actually one of the most intriguing things about the times in which we live, is the extent to which that's already happening. And Sister Janet, I suspect that in terms of a lot of the people that you are, that you work with, that you've already seen that to a large extent. People who care about the environment are feeling a real call to action right now.
You know, think globally and act locally is what Nan is referring to. But, you know, we also say we have to somehow work to change the system. We have to do both of them. If we just do our own little composting and recycling, you know, one of the things that is topmost in my mind now is what's going to happen to the EPA. There's a movement trying to, well, let's do away with the Environmental Protection Agency. And look what it has accomplished since, you know, 1970. We wouldn't have our Clean Air and Clean Water Acts and protecting much of our environment without that. And if the head of that organization wants to deregulate most of the things that have been put in place, it's going to be bad news. Yeah. So writing letters, speaking up is important.
And if you need a little bit of inspiration, just think about Wisconsin's history of great environmentalists. Even though that might be a little overshadowed, shall we say, by things that are going on, we have some people in our history like Aldo Leopold and a whole host of others. We have something called the Conservationist Hall of Fame, and you can just Google that. But there are so many people in Wisconsin who have helped to change the path of things into the right direction. And so that sometimes we lack inspiration, and so you can kind of look those people up and read a Sand County Almanac from time to time, and hopefully you find the energy to keep going.
And as we look forward to Earth Day, our own Governor Gaylord Nelson was the founder of Earth Day. So
it's a rich history.
We do have a great heritage.
And Jill Buckman, you have an interesting perspective on all this, given the study you've done in sustainability. And the fact that for you, you are interested in a sense, finding ways for businesses to flourish in sustainable ways, that we don't have to think about all of this necessarily in kind of adversarial terms, that either you can create jobs or you preserve the passenger pigeon or whatever it might be. That, but I mean, it's very, very right. It's very easy to think about all this in simplistic terms as an either or. And it sounds like what you have studied has been a way to kind of mold these things together, because we obviously don't want businesses to go out of business. We don't want, our economy to stagnate. And yet we need obviously to find ways for our economy to move forward in ways that won't be terribly injurious to the environment.
I think part of it goes along to what Sister Jan was saying about looking towards the future and future generations. It's the same for your business. Heavy profit now is a very short-term goal for businesses. So environmentally friendly activities might allow them to prosper long-term more so than getting all the profit up front and benefiting up front for it, where if they're thinking long-term, you know, multiple generations ahead, how is their business going to survive long term? I think it brings more into focus on, okay, what can we do to preserve the environment, help the environment, and make our communities happy, you know, kind of lead the charge on this is important, we need to be here long term. This is for our communities, for our investors. So I don't think it's necessarily they have to always choose the best ways, but they have to look long-term, and I think that helps get them into that environmentally friendly choices long-term.
And I think, too, we have to remember that as we're all consumers, and as such, we hold the power. So put your money where it can do the most good. There are businesses all over Racine County, Kenosha County, Walworth County, all over Wisconsin that are doing it well and doing it right. So patronize those business owners and let them know that that's why you're doing it.
Right, right. So the good can continue. Well, this is a nice moment to remind everybody about EcoFest because, of course, this is an event that in so many respects is meant to galvanize and inspire and so on. So Sister Janet, remind us about the specifics of EcoFest.
So EcoFest, even though it's 3 weeks out, March 18th, mark it on your calendars, and I'm sure Nan's going to remind you all again before the event happens. But it's Saturday, March 18th from 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock. There will be all kinds of activities, lots of hands-on, a lot of materials that you can take home, plus free seeds if you're into gardening, many, many children activities, and there will be some refreshments, and some of the table displays will have things for sale. I know for sure that the Eco Justice Center is raising some herbs. If you'd like to start cooking with some herbs, there will be some available for sale.
Very good.
So, tell your friends, neighbors, March 18th, 9 to 1, free admission and free gifts, family event, fun for all.
And all kinds of activities for children. So if you have any concerns about that, Jill Buckman's going to make sure that they are entertained even as they are learning plenty. So again, that's on the Racine campus of Gateway Technical College on Saturday, March 18th from 9 until 1. And we want to remind people about the event 2 days before about pollinators in our community, and that's going to be at the Golden Rondell. Is there a phone number for reserving a seat
there? Yes, you need to reserve. You can just look online, Golden Rondell. They'll give you the phone number. It is 262-260-2154 to reserve a spot.
Right.
I think 2 days after the flyers came out, we already had nearly 70 registrations, and it's limited to about 200.
I was going to say, the Golden Rondell, it's a beautiful facility, but it's not all that large. So if that's something of interest to you, you should get your name in right away. Sister Janet and Jill Buckman, so good to have both of you here. Thank you for your hard work on EcoFest. We hope that a lot of people are going to seek out this wonderful event and come away inspired to care about our environment even more. So thank you for being here, and thank you for your good work.
Thank you for having us.
Nan Calvert, do you want to tell us about any other calendar events besides EcoFest?
I would love to. This Saturday evening from 7 until 8 p.m. at Richard Bong State Recreation Area, there will be a program entitled Coyote Neighbors. You'll be able to discover how perfectly adapted coyotes are to survive, learn tips for living near them, and then you get to go outside and try to call for coyotes, which probably won't be too hard.
Right.
March 11th at Hawthorne Hollow, there will be a maple sugaring adult and family class from 10 in the morning until noon. Join them as they tap their sugar bush. During the month of March, visitors will take a journey back in time and discover the magic of maple sugaring. You need to register, and it fills up quickly and space is limited. So give them a call. This is a really popular and fun thing to do. So do give them a call. Hawthorne Hollow, March 11th from 10 until noon. And then at Sino Conservancy, beginning March 22nd, it will be beginning wood turning. There will be a series of six classes over 6 weeks, and you'll be introduced to the world of wood turning. There will be three lathes set up. There will be tools for you to use. All of the materials will be provided, and you'll get to create your own really cool little wood sculpture under the auspices of learning how to do wood turning, which is becoming a very popular hobby. Our expert will be Todd Eckert, and he's been doing this for decades and decades. You do have to register. Space is very limited. Call 539-3222 to register.
Sounds fascinating. Nan Calvert joins us once a month, and we will look forward to seeing you during the month of March with yet another interesting program.
I will be here.
Very good. It's 8:45. Part two of the morning show is coming up here on WGTDHD, your gateway to public radio. I hope some of you remember as fondly as I do a conversation which I had some time ago with Ian Stewart, Emeritus Professor of Mathematics, and the author of a very, very interesting book, well, quite a number of books, but a more recent book which spelled out some of the most intriguing, interesting little mathematical facts in a book called Professor Stewart's Cabinet of Mathematical Curiosities. His latest book is called In Pursuit of the Unknown, 17 Equations That Changed the World. And, of course, this is an opportunity for those of us not so mathematically inclined to perhaps come to a better understanding of those formidable, intimidating equations with all the X's and Y's and equals and so on that can really baffle us. And, of course, many of these are equations that really point to fundamental understandings of how the world operates. And as always, Professor Stewart has done an admirable job of making all of this knowable. And this is a Basic Books publication. Professor Ian Stewart, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Morning, Greg.
Looking forward to speaking with you. I liked in the introduction to the book a moment when, for instance, you explained to us the equal sign. And tell us that unlike a lot of mathematical symbols, maybe most mathematical symbols, we actually know when and by whom this symbol was created. Can we begin with something as simple and mundane as that? I think it's fascinating.
We can. I mean, yes. So many of the math symbols just go back into ancient times, and nobody really knows exactly where they came from. But the equal sign, a man called Robert Record, wrote a book called The Whetstone of Wit. And somewhere in it, he says, I will use, as is my custom, as I usually do, a pair of parallel lines to represent equality, because no two things could be more equal. So his equal sign, it's like our equal sign, except it's much, much longer.
Right.
So if you imagine two lines about an inch long and about a 20th of an inch apart, one on top of the other, you've got his sign. But it's clearly, it just gets slowly shortened as kind of time goes on. So at least we know the origins of the topic of the book, if you wish.
Absolutely. And, of course, in thinking about what an equal sign means, that, of course, tells us something about what an equation in its most basic sense actually means. You spell out in the introduction two different kinds of equations, and both of them figure prominently in this book. And you tell us also that sometimes the line between the two types can be a bit blurred, or that a given equation can sometimes represent both types. Can you say a word about that?
Yeah, the main types are purely mathematical things where the equation is just a statement of something that's true. So Pythagoras' theorem, which we meet at school in geometry lessons, tells us that the longest side of a right-angled triangle is equal to the square of that side is equal to the sum of the squares of the other two sides. Now, that's just a fact of geometry. On the other hand, Newton's law of gravity tells us that two bodies in the universe attract each other with a force that is equal to a particular mathematical formula involving their masses and the distance between them. Now, that's not a mathematical fact, that's a physical fact. It's not even necessarily 100% accurate, but it was good enough for several hundred years. It's very, very close to the reality. But it could, in principle, have been different. So some of the equations in the book are of these sort of pure mathematical inventions or relationships, which are nonetheless useful. But then if you take Pythagoras' equation even, it's valid for measurements of triangles in the real world. So surveying uses that formula. And now you're talking about actual lengths of real physical things. And in fact, if on the curved surface of the Earth, after a while, if the scale gets big enough, that formula no longer applies because the curvature gets in the way. And that led to all sorts of interesting mathematics for navigation and surveying and things of that kind.
Hmm. You point out how certain equations, in a sense, give birth or give rise to whole mathematical disciplines, in a sense. For instance, is it chapter 2 that, no, I'm trying to remember now, chapter 3, I think, which is an equation that, in a sense, gives rise to calculus, or much of what we do in calculus is possible because of this particular equation.
That's right. This is an equation that actually the calculus was invented before this particular equation that I used to decorate the chapter came along. The equation is the way mathematicians managed to deal with various logical problems in the foundations of calculus. So if you go back to the early days of calculus, you have Isaac Newton and Gottfried Leibniz semi-independently inventing the basic ideas of calculus. It's a rather complicated story as to what extent one of them got there ahead of the other, and both of them built rather heavily on what had gone before, and both of them left a kind of logical problem. So the problem is to do with, let's say, calculus is about things like how does velocity depend upon position. If I'm driving a car along the road, if I measure where the car is at certain instants of time, can I work out how fast it's going? And the obvious thing, you measure where it is now, you measure where it is 1 second later, you take the distance between those two, and it's that distance per second. But suppose the car is accelerating. Well, actually, its speed at the beginning of that second is slightly different from its speed at the end of that second, so that average isn't quite right. So what Newton said was, well, we use something much smaller than a second. You use a tenth of a second, a hundredth of a second, a thousandth of a second. Whatever you use mathematically, there's always an objection that over the time interval, the quantity can change. So Newton had a form of words which effectively said, take that interval and let it become as small as you please. Let it flow towards zero. And then work out the speed and see what happens to the speed as everything flows towards zero. And that we will call the instantaneous speed. And this is how calculus got going. And there was a big dust-up with various philosophers on the grounds that logically, some of this didn't quite make sense, because either this interval is zero or it's not. And if it's not, you can't pretend that it is. And it took mathematicians several hundred years to come up with the right formalism, the right form of words, the right way of presenting these things to make the calculus logically sound. Hmm. And so that's an important formula because it provides a mathematical underpinning for things that by the time the mathematicians had solved that problem, the physicists were so used to using the calculus, they didn't really care anyway. It was clear that it worked. But the logical foundations really did need sorting out.
Hmm. And I suppose it brought a certain sort of clarity, almost kind of a moral clarity to what was being undertaken. I wonder if you could, in just a couple of minutes that we remain, if we could talk about what you talk about in Chapter 7 of your book, one of these 17 different equations. This one, the chapter called Patterns of Chance, Normal Distribution, essentially saying the probability of observing a particular data value is greatest near the mean value, the average, and dies away rapidly as the difference from the mean increases. A really basic truth that I think most of us understand, and yet we look at this equation. I mean, it includes all kinds of symbols. I don't even know what they are or don't begin to understand what they mean, and yet this incredibly complex looking equation somehow gives mathematical clarity to a very basic fundamental factor of real life.
That's right. This is the famous bell curve of probability and statistics. And the formula is, the equation is probably has more symbols in it than any other equation in the book. But it's just this sort of, it's a mathematical description in precise terms of what you just said, of how observations cluster around their mean value. And it goes back to the mathematics of it comes from gambling problems, people rolling dice and playing for money, playing cards, things like that, where probability actually first became apparent. And one of the ironies is that one of the people who was deeply involved in all this was Blaise Pascal, who later in life became very, very religious and probably wouldn't have approved of gambling very much, but in his youth he did. There's a Frenchman called Adolphe Quetelet who went around measuring people and making social data. He measured lots of people's heights. And when he plotted the heights on a graph, so that for each height you draw a line which represents how many people are that high, he got this beautiful bell-shaped curve. It sort of comes in from the left, goes up to a peak, goes back down again, and disappears. And the average is slap bang in the middle. And the mathematicians devised a formula for this curve called the normal distribution by using the probability methods that have come from problems with dice and applying these to this kind of social data. And this opened up the whole world of statistics. Now, as we all know, statistics is not wholly benign. It is very easy to abuse statistics or to misuse statistical methods. But nonetheless, statistics is a very, very powerful way of understanding our society. And it's used for things like testing how effective a new kind of medicine is, a new medical treatment, and many other very practical applications.
Of course, and if anything, that's becoming more and more a predominant tool used and misused in common life. And it's very interesting to explore the mathematics behind it and behind these other equations as well. Again, the book is called In Pursuit of the Unknown, 17 Equations That Changed the World. This is a Basic Books publication. And Professor Ian Stewart, once again, a great pleasure to speak with you and to talk with you about yet another fascinating book which has come from your pen. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Greg.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, as part of Black History Month, I will be replaying an interview which I first recorded just over a year and a half ago with the author of a fascinating new biography of George Washington Carver. Support for The Morning Show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for The Morning Show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. A reminder that Wisconsin Public Radio's winter membership drive is underway right now. And we remind you that when you support Wisconsin Public Radio, you are supporting WGTD. If you have not yet done so, I would urge you to contact Wisconsin Public Radio in one of two ways, either online at wpr.org or by calling toll-free